Chapter 47, 400 Beacon Street. Henrietta, if I ever go away from here to another house, it will be to be delivered up to my enemies. Mary Baker Eddy, 1908. Irving Tomlinson was banished from Pleasant View on January 1, 1908, and he wrote to the trustees of the Publishing Society on the same day. This is to let you know that I expect to resume my work upon the Bible Lesson Committee on Saturday next. I return to this labor of love with the approval of our beloved leader. The leader may not have been quite so beloved in Irving's eyes on that New Year's Day, but he was seeing more clearly when he wrote her a few days later. This was not the first time Mr. Tomlinson had been exiled, but on this occasion, the leader called Arthur Vosburgh to Pleasant View to replace him. In her answer to Tomlinson on January 11th, she said, "Your suggestion to return to me seemed nothing but a lack of faith in what I had before tenderly and honestly, as usual, explained. And you agreed with me afterwards and said so. Now the tempter turns you back to your old temptation to doubt either the honesty or the spiritual understanding of Mrs. Eddy. If I should have you return to me, I should disobey God, for I know what he teaches me, and you do not know it, and even disbelieve me when I tell you." While this was going on, the leader had called Allison V. Stewart and talked with him in regard to his succeeding Joseph Armstrong as her publisher. It is possible that she did not mention the directorship to him during the interview. Stewart wrote to her on January 8th. "Beloved leader, again I come to you with love and gratitude, and I sincerely thank you for the additional duties you have assigned to me in connection with the great cause of Christian Science. I also thank you for the further expression of confidence which you have vouchsafed me. My election as a member of the Christian Science Board of Directors of your church, the First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston, impresses me deeply, as I regard this office as a sacred trust and feel that it is a great honor to serve you and the cause in this capacity. It is my prayer that I may ever keep in mind these your recent words of loving admonition to me, quote, 'Lean on him, God, trust him, understand him, and he will give you foresight, wisdom, and capacity to execute his will and benefit his cause.'" End quote. Lovingly yours, Allison V. Stewart. The day before Mr. Stewart wrote this letter, there had been another casualty in the wake of the battle of the next friends. Pamela Leonard died at her home in Brooklyn. Many of those who had served at Pleasant View knew Mrs. Leonard well, for she had come there many times to serve the leader. On January 12th, Mrs. Eddy wrote to George Kinter, "Life is the law of health, and you are the manifestation, the embodiment of this law. Know this, feel it. The ways of God are often hard to determine, but love is preparing us all for a great work." Though very few people knew about it, the date of Mrs. Eddy's move to Chestnut Hill had been set for Sunday, January 26th. However, she wrote Mr. McClellan a week earlier, "Beloved, I am sorry to say I must go sooner than Sunday next, if possible. It seems more than I have power to meet with all the... Make the date earlier if you can. If all the work is not finished in the house, it can be completed after I am there. Work was done in this house while I was in it. Name an earlier time if possible. Lovingly yours, M. B. Eddy. We hope that there was truly an effort toward an earlier date for her move. God's chosen witness complained not of the heavy and sometimes changing demands placed upon her, but bowed her head in meek submission. The same cannot be said for her less than humble followers. Many times they considered their human opinions and plans superior to the leader's requests. Had they been as obedient as she would be with us here today, leading all of the world to spiritual understanding. And had she not thundered at them at times to force them to obey God's behests, she would not have accomplished as much as she did for all mankind. If they did try to comply with her request of January 19th, it was not possible. Sunday morning, January 26th, the routine at Pleasant View began as usual. The mental workers gathered in Mrs. Eddy's study, and she opened her Bible to 1 Corinthians 9, verses 10 through 14, which she read to them. Nevertheless, we have not used this power, but suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Do ye not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple? And they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar? Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. This inspired what John Lathrop described as a, quote, grand talk, end quote. About the time the household was having their noon meal, a special train consisting of a locomotive, a baggage car, a private car, and a regular passenger car was made up and backed into the Concord station, while the railroad yardmen knew not its purpose. About 1 o'clock, according to Adelaide Still, Mrs. Eddy started out as if for her drive at the usual time. Then hacks came up one after another until all the household were on their way. Mrs. Eddy's carriage went around a longer way, so that when she reached the station, we were all on the special train. And as soon as she was seated, we started on our journey. Archibald McClellan, who had been responsible for all the arrangements, was also present on this journey with Mrs. Eddy and her household. According to the next day's newspapers, quote, the departure by special train at 2 o'clock was witnessed by only a chance handful of station loiterers. End quote. The Boston Globe said on January 27th, every precaution to safeguard Mrs. Eddy was taken, the special train being preceded by a pilot engine to see that there were no obstructions, while another locomotive followed the special at a distance of 0.5 mile to guard against the possibility of a rear-end collision. The special train had the right of way, and after several line transfers, was transferred to the Newton Circuit line, over which it was taken to the Chestnut Hill station. One of Mrs. Eddy's carriages was waiting for her at the station, as well as taxis and hacks for the rest of the party. Miss Still and the others in the taxis arrived first and were at the door of 400 Beacon Street when Mrs. Eddy arrived. A group of reporters was also there awaiting her arrival. John Salcho, riding in the last hack, saw them, jumped down and ran to Mrs. Eddy's carriage just as she was ready to step out. "John, can you get me into the house?" she asked. And John responded, "I surely can." John swept her up in his strong arms, pressed through the startled newsman, straight into the house, where he bore her upstairs and set her down in her chair in her study. She clapped her hands, and her joyous laugh rang through the hall. All the newspapers had to say of the episode the next day was, quote, "A huge Swede grabbed Mrs. Eddy and ran off with her," end quote. In the statement Alfred Farlow gave to the press that evening, he said, "The Lawrence estate, which has been remodeled, has been quietly furnished for Mrs. Eddy and her household, and she occupied it at 4:45 this afternoon. They left Concord at 2 p.m. on a special train. Here, everything was found in full equipment, and supper was served at the usual hour. Except for the 3 hours required to make the trip, there was no break in the usual routine of the family. Anyone who has ever moved knows what a feat that was. The leader truly demonstrated her words, recorded in divinity course and general collectania." Malicious animal magnetism cannot, through any claim of business necessity or policy, move me either internally or externally. It cannot change my habitation, for I inhabit infinity, eternity. I dwell in the realm of unending bliss, in a house not made with hands, high in the heavens of life, truth, and love. I live in the atmosphere of purity, peace, and plenty, and in the sunshine of love and joy. My home has an everlasting foundation. There is no limit to its beauty and pleasantness, and infinite love conducts my home. There is but one homemaker, one home beautiful, one builder, one habitation, quote, "For in him we live and move and have our being," end quote. Mrs. Eddy's spiritual sense of beauty and pleasantness had permeated every part of Pleasant View. Her followers had done their utmost humanly to prepare her new home for her, but to the leader, the dark gray stone mansion was austere and repelling. She later dictated to Adam Dickey, quote, "When I looked on the house, I was shocked and went to my room and wept," end quote. As she looked around that first afternoon, she said, quote, "Oh, splendid misery," end quote. And on further inspection the next morning, according to Adelaide Still's reminiscences, she said, quote, "A great barn of a place," end quote. On the day Mrs. Eddy moved to Chestnut Hill, William B. Johnson wrote to Adam Dickey in Kansas City. Both Mr. and Mrs. Dickey were active practitioners, and Mr. Dickey was a teacher as well as first reader in their church in Kansas City, Missouri. The Pleasant View Committee had called on Mr. Dickey several times during the past year and asked his assistance in finding suitable help for Mrs. Eddy's home. Mr. Dickey knew many who would have jumped at the opportunity, but none who could meet the qualifications. He had imagined that Mrs. Eddy lived in quiet, comfortable luxury. I had no idea that she was constantly besieged by all the forces of evil, and that she had to be in the front line of battle day and night throughout all the years of her leadership, and that those serving in any capacity in her home came under a line of malpractice that existed nowhere else on earth. It became clear to Mr. Dickey that only experienced practitioners could qualify for working in the leader's home, but he did not know that he was being considered for such work until he visited the Mother Church in June of 1907. At that time, a committee of three had questioned him rather closely. When asked about his willingness to serve, he said he would immediately drop everything to go even to shovel snow off her sidewalk. He was laughingly assured that finding help to shovel snow was no problem. It was work of a different nature that concerned them. Mr. Johnson's letter of January 26th extended a call to Mr. Dickey to serve in the leader's home. Mr. Dickey received the letter on Wednesday, January 29th, and was on his way to Boston the following Monday. Before Mr. Dickey arrived, Mrs. Eddy had decided to do some remodeling. Her study, with a rose-patterned carpet, was far too large. She said that she could not wait for her secretary to come to her across all those roses. While Mrs. Eddy had a good deal of adjustment to make, so did the city of Concord, which was in a state of shock. Irving Tomlinson, who had accompanied the household on the train, wrote to the leader from Concord on Tuesday, January 28th. Dearly beloved leader, I have been home but a short time, but long enough to learn of the universal regret in Concord because of the departure of our beloved leader. My progress downtown this morning was slow because so many stopped me to express their sorrow for their great loss. The following are a few of the sincere expressions of regret spoken to me in the few hours that I have been at home. I give only a few words from each one. I met in Boston while going to the Union Station your old friend, Mr. Amos Blanchard, who, you know, is now spending the winter in Boston. Mr. Blanchard testified to the great loss to Concord in your departure and said, quote, "I found people very much disturbed. Concord feels badly about it," end quote. On the train, I saw General Streeter, who said, quote, "There is a general feeling of regret. I certainly hope she will return," end quote. Since my arrival here, the telephone has been busy with regrets, some of which I will give you as well as a few from those I have met upon the street. Mr. Josiah E. Fernald, quote, "Concord has received a great surprise. From a large number of people, I have heard nice things said of Mrs. Eddy. I shall write her about it," end quote. Mr. Isaac Hill, the grandson of Governor Hill, the friend of your brother Albert, said, quote, "I deeply regret the outcome. Those people will awaken to the loss to Concord. Our foremost citizen has gone from us," end quote. Mr. Corser, the express agent, quote, "I can't tell you how badly I feel. Those who have failed to appreciate Mrs. Eddy will find out what a loss Concord has suffered. End quote. Mrs. Haskins, quote, "It is hard to lose those we love. It is the greatest calamity that ever overtook Concord. Neighbors all express regret. Mr. Dunlap, the druggist, told me that Concord had lost its best citizen." End quote. Mr. J. Wesley Plummer, quote, "I have had a very blue day. I feel that a great blow has fallen upon Concord." End quote. Mrs. Putnam, quote, "The whole town is in mourning. Regret is expressed on all sides." End quote. Mr. W. W. Hill, who called in to see me, said, quote, "Wherever you go, people are downcast. They realize now how much Mrs. Eddy has been to Concord. Mrs. Hill feels very badly." End quote. Mrs. M. Meehan, quote, "I felt as if someone near and dear to me had gone. I wished when reading of the Brookline residents that Concord could have built the same suitable house for her here." End quote. Dr. Worthen telephoned his sincere regret and said that he was to call a church meeting to allow the people to express their sorrow for their loss. Lovingly yours, Irving C. Tomlinson. Dr. Worthen did call a meeting of the Concord Christian Science Church the next day, at which time the members adopted a letter of regret and appreciation to Mrs. Eddy. John Worthen also made a trip to Brookline on Thursday, January 30th, to present Mrs. Eddy with a handsome jeweled insignia containing 5 rubies and 75 diamonds, together with another letter from her Concord Church. Beloved leader and teacher, the resident members of First Church of Christ Scientist, Concord, New Hampshire, have secured from France the jeweled insignia which you are entitled to wear by reason of the honorary decoration of Officier d'Académie, which has been bestowed upon you for valuable and distinguished services. It is a great joy to us and to all your followers that a great nation has recognized you as an author of excellence whose works are of unusual merit. We fully realize that no worldly honor that can be bestowed begins to measure the wonderful good that you have brought and are bringing to all mankind. The local members of this church joyfully embrace this opportunity of proving to you in a degree our appreciation of the good we have received directly and indirectly from you and your writings. We present to you with our deepest gratitude and love this insignia of the officier which the French government has recently conferred upon you. John H. Worthen, Joseph A. Moore, Josiah E. Dwight, William A. Thompson, J. Wesley Plummer, Concord, New Hampshire, January 28, 1908.